Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Customer-Led Groove Show, where we discuss and share the best practices and the latest trends in customer marketing, advocacy, and customer-led growth. Today's episode is brought to you by BASE, a pioneer in B2B marketing and the industry's first CLG ecosystem for customer-led marketers, sales, and product professionals. Okay, let's welcome the CLG team and today's guests.
Hi there, Scott Wilder here, and welcome to another episode of Customer-Led Groove. And today our guest is Samantha Ania Logan. Hi there.
Hello. It's really wonderful to be on. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. We just opened up the doors to our CLG campus. So this will be one of the first pieces of audio content that will be offered to our students there. Anyway, so tell us a little bit about you and Socially Constructed.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Samantha Ania Logan. I do go by Ania. And sociallyconstructed.online is my consultancy / e-course company, where I essentially build online communities for people using social science as a base. And then I teach online community managers the social science of building their own communities.
You know, before we get into the details about what you do and some of the companies you work with, how did you go down this path? Like, how did you end up doing what you're doing today?
I started in a somewhat non-traditional area, as most community managers are. You just kind of get thrust into this work from random places, right? I actually started in the LGBTQ and queer space about a decade ago now, 2012 or so. I started a YouTube channel. And it basically went over my journey as a trans queer woman. And I ended up with 4,500 other trans individuals who were not able to live authentically. And because they weren't able to live authentically, but they still required resources online, they came to me and they said, "We don't want you to track us. We don't want you to measure us in any way, shape, or form, but we do need you to access resources that out individuals would have and provide them to us." And I'm like, "I don't know how to do that, but I'll give it a go," right? And I went to academia and I asked, how exactly am I supposed to cater to safety, security, and anonymity while also proving that this community exists? How do I measure this online space? And academia was like, "We don't know, but that's our specialty," right? Like, the whole point of academia is to do the things that we don't understand. So they asked me to take communication classes, marketing classes, business, anthropology, sociology, psychology. I took a lot of them and I effectively had to trailblaze my own degree path in communication, anthropology, and a specialization in virtual worlds. But as soon as I finished that, I didn't really know how the mechanistic aspect of the internet worked. So I had to spend some time as a full stack marketer, learning SEO, email marketing, data flows, the measurement side. And now I've kind of combined these two histories into the social science and measuring online community health for brand communities, open source communities, the like.
I've always been interested in folks that have that interdisciplinary background that bring together different parts of education and academia. And also, you know, you were thinking about authenticity probably before, you know, today it's like everybody's like, authenticity is important, trust is important, all that stuff. But you were like an early adopter to being authentic.
Yeah, I would definitely say I watched retarget marketing as an industry build out of this notion of big data and data brokering. And the going vibe in marketing at the time was, we need to use this data so that ads and the economic engine that runs the internet is less annoying, is more fitting to an individual's life. The ads don't interfere with their life in any way, shape, or form. But the dark undertow of that was that it became possible for you to determine whether or not a person was pregnant a month into their pregnancy, just purely based upon a simple Google search. And that definitely created a threatening vibe specifically for a large majority of queer community members who weren't out. It was dangerous, right? We had to cater to that security and anonymity on that. So I will say Mozilla was immensely helpful in that regard, as was DuckDuckGo. Like, they saw these trends in these areas, mm-hmm. and tried to make a lot of assistance. But I am happy that the world is starting to turn back that way.
Do you think it's turning back fast enough? Do you think it's, how do you look at where we are today?
I think we're still on an edge. We could go either way, really. And I see a lot of things like GDPR, for instance, and the iOS block and server-based tracking, the ability for an individual to actually go to an individual small business and say, take me off your list. And that actually means take me off your ads, right? All of that is really, really helpful. But in its place, especially in online community where I specialize in social currency and in qualitative data sentiment analysis, I'm seeing it happen all over again. So I'm really scared. I feel like on one side, there's this absolute utopia that we could get to in which people have respected privacy and anonymity, and the internet is based upon people's thoughts and feelings and emotions and opinions as opposed to their behaviors. And on the other end is this super dystopian topic of using qualitative data and using community-centered data in order to tokenize our relationships, paying to have a conversation with another individual, nickels and dimes, literally. And I really don't want to be there where everything is so decentralized and meritocratized to the point that actual interaction always comes with a price or comes with an expectation of payment.
Yeah. I mean, as you know, I focus a lot on advocacy, and I always think of, like, before you ask for something, like, you need to basically acknowledge the other person, acknowledge what their needs are before you ask. But it's, you know, I think I see a lot of companies still struggling over that, you know? So it's the classic thing is, you know, I'm part of Slack community, and you know, everybody's saying, okay, so what can I ask these customers to do? And when I ask them, so how long have they been customers? Then it's like, you know, well, some of them are 3 months, some of them, you know, I'm like, well, 3 months. I mean, anyway, and then how does, I could go down this path. I mean, lots of questions around this, but because I think it is a really important topic, but I'm also curious of how anthropology fits into what you're doing. You and I talked a while back around, you know, anthropology and ethnographics, which I think is also kind of really key in our space. I don't hear many people talk about it, so it was really refreshing to hear you bring it up. How do you see it? How did that, when you studied that, tell me a little bit about that and how you tie that to your work.
Sure. Yeah. So during my collegiate years, I was introduced to anthropology and to communication. I received an introduction to an entirely new world of science. And it's a world of science that a lot of people tend to put down in social science because they literally call it soft science. And that language needs to go away because in all actuality, it's the reverse. When you go into anthropology 101 or you go into communication 101, the first thing that they're going to teach you are the rules that set social science as a science, right? It's the social scientific process. And I think a lot of people, in the absence of the knowledge of the social scientific process, are trying to shove online community into the scientific method they learned in sixth grade. That's not going to work. And the reason it's not going to work, the reason why CEOs aren't getting their answers, the reason why correlation does not equal causation is a problem, is because they don't have the underlying infrastructure makes community a social science. In all reality, and I say this so often, online communities are units of culture. That's the definition of community, anthropologically speaking. They are units of culture. Your job is to build a culture. And in order to build a culture, your community must be a social scientific entity. And the scientific method, I'm going to say this, and it might anger people, the scientific method is insufficient for studying community. You have to use the social scientific process. We augmented the scientific method in order to make it work. There are rules to play by. And if you don't know those rules, you're going to be hard pressed finding results that actually convince CEOs.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think many community managers or people in, you know, the advocacy space or people interacting with customers are thinking about this being like units of culture. So you know, here I am a few years out of school, a few years in my job. Like, how do I get started to think that way? And how can I convince my boss that it's worth putting time into that approach versus show me the results?
I'm going to say this, and this might sound at first like I'm undercutting myself and my own expertise, right? You don't need social science to start in community. You don't need social science to build community. And I think it's really important to recognize where you're right now, where your community is, and recognize that measurement and community engagement are both muscles. You're building networks and you're building relationships. You're measuring those, starting simplistically and becoming increasingly complex. So as your muscles start to increase, as you become a professional community management individual, a professional community builder, I do think that it's necessary to look at social science in order to structure the interactions that you have, the arguments that you make, and your progress over time. Every day you're learning in your community, that progress should come with the knowledge and the structure academia can provide to you. So I do want to say, like, you don't need me for a 101 community, right? But if you want to go to that next level, if you want to do a 201 frameworks for understanding community, that's where anthropology is. That's where you can learn about deep description. You can start to change this concept of testing the variables over and over and over again to testing scope in those variables. And these are the kinds of things that you learn in social science that will level up your skills, right? But it's also really important to recognize that anthropology is an ivory tower kind of thing. It's difficult to get into and it's difficult to get information from. And that's what I'm hoping to do with Socially Constructed Online is make that more accessible, build collaborative, iterative learning environments where we can actually build that muscle together.
Again, I'm just out of school here. I'm new on the campus. How do I know if I'm ready for 201? And then besides picking up the Zoom phone and calling you, like, how do I like get started?
First things first, go build a community. I always say this all the time, plan big, because it's kind of like you need to have headlights in front of your car, but you're still going mile by mile. Don't go so fast that you override your headlights and can't see what you're doing. You need to have a plan and you need to progress small. And at the point in time where you can't do anything but override your headlights, when your plan doesn't give you predictability, when scaling starts to create more problems than it's worth, that's the moment when you start to think, I need new frameworks. I need a better structure for this. So for instance, most of my clients already have communities or already have built a following and don't know how to galvanize that community, to monetize it, to scale it. Whatever the goal is, they just don't know how to get to that point. They've done the beginning work. They know this is something they want to do. They want to invest in online community, but they just can't take that next step. When you get stuck, it's the moment when you need to step back and say, all right, research mode. I'm going to go learn how to do. And you can learn from social science bit by bit. I have a whole bunch of content on my YouTube channel that allows you to get like a basic introduction into the social science of online community. But ultimately, what you need to do is you need to have a framework set of structures that you are introduced to. I'm hoping to do that pretty succinctly soon. And then after all of that, you learn to apply it. You have to learn and then apply in phases.
The companies you work with, what type of companies are those?
I run the gamut. I'm going to be honest. I have been told I need to niche down and I haven't really found a niche necessarily, but I have found a specialty, and that specialty is in the social science of community. That's like my special star that I bring to the environment. And I think it's really important to recognize that social science is all about finding and discovering not just the special snowflake communities where weird stuff is happening, but in the trend, in the pattern of all the communities that social science researches, it has discovered cultural universals. Mm-hmm. And online communities are no different from any other culture that an anthropologist would go into. There are cultural universals to online communities. And if you could apply those cultural universals using social science, you can build a community that carries patterns and trends the same way. And what special snowflake thing does happen in your community? should come about as a result of your research, you'll find out pretty quick where you're special and where you're.
I really like that. You know, I play in the community space, as I said, and also advocacy space. And I think what you're saying applies to both those universes. And a lot of times they collide. It's the same people.
I agree. And on one end, I totally get it because marketing wise, you need to niche down. I actually have this phrase I say all the time. It usually applies to DEI more than it does anything else. But I always say exclusivity breeds inclusivity. Don't expand your services, diversify them, which is to say you should niche down where you can. But I've also found that for my own personal business and for my own personal work, it really helps to be able to speak a lot of different languages and pull advice from a lot of different communities. So having my hands in a lot of buckets has been to my advantage in my career.
Yeah. I mean, that really resonates with me because one of the things that we're trying to do is with this campus is bring in people who don't necessarily play in our space, but I think their work, their expertise, their experience can bring a lot of value. A really explicit example is like, we're B2B retention in some ways, but there's so much to learn from B2C loyalty, and I'm simplifying it. But I think, you know, what you're saying also is, you know, how these other groups, maybe their niche groups operate, function, whatever, can bring a lot to the table for the larger universe.
I absolutely agree. And I also kind of feel like it's built into the role of being a community builder, right? In order for us to have empathy, we're learning from a whole bunch of other people, being polymathematic, in other words, knowing a lot of things about a lot of things, works in our favor as community managers because we're able to pick and pull from different frameworks in different areas, put them together in order to create a community that allows for those various different diverse opinions to connect. I also recognize that you can go too far.
And how would you evaluate like the level of sophistication when it comes to analytics in these current communities that you look at, or just in general in the marketplace?
If you are too confused in your community to know what's going on, you need to learn. If you're bored because your community isn't growing and you don't feel like you're growing, you need to start. If your community is at a point where they are telling you the actions that you are taking or the functions of your community are starting to break down, you need to learn. And it's really, really critical. I say this with bias because I am a community consultant, but I believe this 100% is the reason why I do what I do. All community managers, I don't care how expert you are in the space, need to have a back pocket community manager to help them see things that they can't see. Also, convince people of things, provide different arguments. A community manager is often alone in working in their community and seeking out other community managers to help you grow and recognize when you need to grow is a critical part of being in this industry.
That has a whole anthropological aspect to it as well. The community manager who's on their own, because it's true, a lot of them are there on their own.
And I am also happy to see that that's changing. Community ops, I am such a fan of Tiffany Oda and what she's done to formalize and rectify community operations as a department. And while I'm at it, Chris Mercer is kind of doing it from the other side, trying to move things into a notion of measurement marketing needs to be its own department of measurement and community needs to be its own department of community operations. So I think that we're trending away from having one community manager running 200,000 people in a community.
Interesting. So in the past, we've talked about power distance and why community managers need to understand that.
Yes.
I know this is close to your heart.
It is. It's also one of the most important things that you need to know as a community manager. So remember how I said, like, as a community manager, you don't need to know the social science to start community. Just go do the thing. And when you run into mistakes and you don't know what to do, that's when you start to look at academia and be like, what happened here? This is a perfect example. I truly believe that the number one thing that you need to know when you go into community as a social science is power distance, because it's going to solve your red tape with C-suite. It's going to help you guide deliberative conversations with key stakeholders and super users. It's going to help you understand DEI issues that you may not otherwise be able to find, such as a spiral of silence, which is this concept of individual comes into your community and they try to contribute. Something happens. They don't really feel like their contribution is valuable. So the next time they contribute, they think it will be less valuable. And then it just starts to go down into spiral of silence. You're going to have a high attrition rate. And that attrition rate is going to be among minority views or opinions, which is an issue. I think we can all agree to. So how do you solve red tape in C-suite? How do you solve spiral of silence? How do you solve all these deliberative conversational problems that you have in your community? The number one thing that you should learn is power distance. Power distance is a sub-theory, actually, of structuration theory, which is this sociological concept that the structures and the environments that we live in affect the way that we communicate with others. Power distance is a very simple version of that, in which the way that you communicate with another individual is impacted both by your prior interactions with that person and their perceived status or power dynamic in relationship to you. So if you're in a pub, you're going to be a little bit more loose-lipped. If you're in your pub with friends, you might be a little bit more comfortable. So the way that you talk, the way that you discuss your work might be very free-flowing, very candid in nature. Then let's go to a meeting with your boss and your boss's boss that wasn't on your schedule, and you're trying to bring up a problem or an issue that they have with you because you have a problem. You're going to change the way that you talk in those two circumstances. The perceived power distance between you and your boss is going to change the way that you talk. Now, take that concept, take power distance and the way that you're interacting with your CEOs and the things that they don't get to hear, macro scale it. Because your boss isn't just one person now in a community. Your boss represents 500 other people who may not want to talk to you because you are a hoity-toity big communication community manager. And that's where things start to get complicated. But it's not all doom and gloom, because you can also use power distance to your advantage as a community manager. As an example, let's say you're in a Zoom chat, I guess. You're in the chat and your job is to stoke conversation. On one hand, you have a Zoom talk where there is a very clear speaker, there is a very clear host, there is a very clear company involved in your brand, and people are expecting to come into this talk in order to listen to the expert that's on stage. What you want is to hear the expertise of your community. You want them talking to one another. That's the whole point, is peer-to-peer conversation. So if you separate your language where you have a specific emoji, I like to use the preach emoji. If you have that emoji for all your marketing and your official statements or whatever, and you say this emoji means it's an official statement, now by virtue of saying that there's this higher status, whenever that emoji isn't there, you're just a face in the crowd. You, the community manager, are now freed up to have a highly interpersonal discussion and conversation. And then you can start commenting on the speaker's options and start adding it. And just by virtue of exemplifying this highly interpersonal notion where the community manager is allowed to participate as a member in addition to a host, you're going to notice that a lot of other people are a lot more lax in that channel as well. Then when things get rowdy, throw that emoji back in and just say, hey, thank you so much for the conversation. Unfortunately, we do need to move on. If you want to continue this conversation, we can continue to do so in Slack or Discord or whatever it is. And now you get to move on. The manipulation of power distance is helpful as a community manager because it lets you facilitate conversation and then admin that conversation later. It also allows you to solve that red tape, because when you're talking to your CEOs and you're having deliberative status, you can say, listen, we are going to set your status as CEO aside because we have a problem and we need to bring this to you with a space of radical candor. We are intentionally breaking the power distance by giving it a voice in that room. So now you've broken red tape. You have a much stronger interpersonal facilitative discussion with your community members. Both of these things result in better deliberative health for your online community.
You know, this makes me think of, so, you know, I've been doing community a long time, and almost every branded community, because that's probably where my DNA is, the community manager has the moderator icon next to their name.
Yeah.
As opposed to Slack, Slack doesn't really do that out of the box. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the person who's moderating in Slack doesn't do that as much. So I'm wondering, like, maybe historically, shame on me, we've been creating all this power distance unintentionally because we've been programmed to say, hey, we're the community moderator and we're an employee of the company in these other communities, right? So we're creating unintentional distance.
Yep, exactly. And recognizing that that distance exists gives you the power and capacity to manipulate it. I will say, having that moderator tag is immensely helpful once you start working with YouTube influencers who have a rather large following, because those YouTube lives get real difficult to manage real quick. So once you have that moderator tag, you can just be like, I'm just going to take four people that I trust from the community. I'm going to give them moderator permissions in exchange for accepting my community guidelines. And then I'm going to tell them, any action that they take to moderate, mute, or boot needs to be connected to a community guideline, and let them run with it. Let them go drunk with power within the rules, and you'll suddenly find that a huge stadium community is a lot easier for a single influencer to run.
Yeah. Now you got me wondering about my history as a community person. Have you dipped your toes into the YouTube shorts at all, or are you still using kind of, I'll call it longer form YouTube?
I'm not going to lie, I love the YouTube shorts. On my YouTube channel, I started by using them just in between videos, just pulling small snippets, repurposing my content, my larger videos or whatever, started tossing them in. Honestly, I just started making native shorts content because it's a way for me to video reply to my own Discord channel, which is amazing. It's one thing to have a Loom video or a really quick Facebook message to someone. It's another thing to just do that exact same format for an announcement on Discord, and it's so much more personable. So I feel like the YouTube shorts, by virtue of being shorter and by virtue of being easier to consume, make it a lot more viable for dialogue.
Yeah, no, I'm surprised. Maybe it's, I know we're a little bit early in the YouTube shorts history in this country, but lots of opportunity there. I'm, you know, surprised it hasn't like kind of rode the wave of TikTok, so to speak.
Yeah, not to plug. I don't necessarily want to plug, but about that, I do have a video coming out on the, I think it's 17th or it's 18th. It's that Friday. And several YouTubers and I actually got together and we decided to make this massive collection of questions about online events and information for community managers. We put it all into a shared playlist. And my video brings up the idea that shorts actually include low context interactions, just like a standard gathering would. So I think it would be really, really fascinating to have asynchronous video conference.
Let me know if you want to work on that. I'd be up for it.
Definitely want to give it a go.
Is there anything I haven't asked you today you thought about and you're like, damn, Wilder, why didn't you ask me?
We have so much, like we could just talk all day. Like you are one of my favorite kind of people. As far as like my biggest concern is I don't want people to feel frightened by the concept that social science is this entirely new thing that they need to get to in community. And I said earlier that measurement is a muscle. So is community management. And I just want to say, understanding the very definition of community, just a single slide, understanding that there is a culture that you are building of experiences, practices, shared goals, and artifacts that come out of the conversation makes it way easier for you to be off to the races as far as social science goes. So try not to be too intimidated by the fact. It's actually genuinely really, really fun being able to nerd out on these facts. And I would be very, very excited to talk more about it if anyone is interested.
Well, I definitely want to get you back on the show. Definitely want to talk to you about getting involved in the campus because I think like this is all, I mean, I love this stuff. You know, I forget what it was, a Zoom call and Vania and I were having like book exchanges here. We were like showing different books because we were so into nerding out about this. And one question I do like to ask everybody before we wrap up is, What person or what book or what website has been the biggest influence on you or a huge influence on you?
I have two answers.
Go for it.
The first one is a website. Super, super fast. Go read the Center for Public Deliberations website page. It's cpd.colostate.edu. The Center for Public Deliberation is an absolutely incredible local governance and deliberative conversation association that's run out of Colorado State University. Their whole point is, how do we come together around tough problems to make solutions and situations together in a democratic fashion? It's incredible, and I highly recommend it. Just perusing through that website is going to level up your community skills tenfold. And then the second one of my absolute favorite books. This is called Salsa Dancing into the Social Sciences. It's literally just Research in an Age of Info Glut. That's actually like the subtitle of it. It's really incredible because it gives you this notion of like, the social sciences are accessible. They're viable. You can use them in your day to day for community management. It's a really, really great book. Fantastic way to get started with your introduction to online community and virtual world research.
Nice. And I one of the things, like I said earlier, is something like social sciences, like the social sciences, things that as community people, we don't normally think about, like, you know, we were so focused on our work, we don't really reach out to these different disciplines and learn from them. And that's something I actually have a post-it here that reminds me to do that, because it's hard. We get really, you know, grounded and focused in our day-to-day. So it's great that, you know, you're sharing the books there and social science. Any last things, like, you know, where can we find you if we want to learn more about what you do? And
it would behoove me to plug, as a community manager, my Discord. I run an online community where I also include an information diet book club where we will be reading a lot of these books together. So if you struggle to read, you can definitely join us for that. And otherwise, you can contact me at Twitter at Samantha Venia. Or on my website, I actually have a totally free grab a coffee kind of consultation situation going on, sociallyconstructed.online.
I need to take you up on that.
Absolutely. I kind of love it. My business strategist definitely does not. He's like, how much time do you actually spend like just talking to people? And I'm like, community manager, shush.
Exactly. Well, this has been great. So I want to thank everybody for dialing in today. This has been Customer-Led Groove, and you can find us on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google, and Alexa, and also on the new CLG campus at clgcampus.base.ai. So thanks again, and we look forward to being with you on the next episode. Thanks.
Thank you again for joining Customer-Led Groove. Remember, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on the CLG campus. Feel free to rate us, follow us, and leave a comment on any of those platforms. We hope to see you again soon when we're back in the Customer-Led Groove.